Well, it's time to have a bit of fun and highlight a few counters or ETFs worth adding to your portfolio with all the usual caveats that a few stocks or ETFs doesn't a diversified portfolio make. There are a few interesting themes in the market at the moment, and we're in the midst of US earnings season, so our focus is on US listed investment instruments. Offshore assets actually are a critical component of a balanced investment portfolio, and the reasons are pretty straightforward. Investing internationally provides a diversification and access to companies and industries that you just can't find locally. South Africa is but a tiny market, accounting for a mere 1% of global GDP, so offshore investments give investors access to opportunities in the other 99%, and Fed Chair Jerome Powell said overnight that it's not time yet to begin discussing any change in policy after the US Central Bank left interest rates and its bond buying program unchanged. That's despite taking a more optimistic view of the country's economic recovery. Powell's comments came before US President Joe Biden's unveiling of a sweeping package for families and education in his first speech to Congress. Biden's speech hit the high points, big infrastructure spend, talking about climate action and vaccines, and with the Fed remaining dovish, we still got all the conditions that are very supportive for risk assets. So with that, let's welcome our panel, Carolyn Kremen, Portfolio Manager at AdviceWorks, Petri Redlinghuis, founder of Herenia Capital, and Iva Majarova, who's Signia's head of investment consulting and Itrix. Carolyn, your first pick is straight out of left field. Zootis. I've never heard of it, so I had to go and look it up. It specializes in making pharmaceuticals for livestock, animals, and pets. And while the company may not be a household name, it does seem to have a pretty decent investment case. What is it?
It's just unbundled from Pfizer, a pharmaceutical company, a few years ago. And it does pharmaceuticals for companion animals, so your dogs and your cats, and also for livestock. Now, the business case for this is that we're spending more on our companion animals. We're prepared to pay whatever the vet charges. There's a very high margin business, the gross margin is 30%. And also there's more protein consumption in the world, especially in China. It's got a very broad product range. It goes from diagnostics to antibiotics to vaccines, aquacultures. And the nice thing is it's got very many diversified customers. And it's very diversified across the world. There's high barriers to entry, like any pharmaceutical company. You've got to put the research in there. And it's growing, and it's going to keep on growing. The more we spend on pets, the more we eat meat.
Now, what might be a possible risk to the investment thesis? Because while, yes, we are eating more meat, there's also this new drive for us to eat everything plant-based. And plant-based veggie burgers and that are all the rage. Would you say that's one of the big risks, or what would you say is a big risk to the investment case?
I think it's a risk down the line. We're already seeing meat consumption in Europe go down, but you're seeing it go up in developing economies because developing economies, as soon as they have a little bit more money, they spend more money on animal protein. And we're definitely seeing that in China. It's not going to trend that's going to change anytime soon. But then on the other side, we're spending more on our pets, and there are more pets out there. So I think for the time being, it's not a problem. I think the bigger worry for me is that 33% of their sales do come from China. So, of course, trade wars and so on and so on, might have an impact on this.
As someone who has forked out an inordinately large amount of money on a Labrador puppy during lockdown, I can certainly attest to that, and one that likes to eat bees and is allergic as well. If you look at the valuation, a current price to earnings, I think, above 40, it doesn't scream cheap at these levels.
No. Look, nothing at this point is screaming cheap. But every so often, Zetas does have, little downward swings. It had one a few months ago. So you just need to stand ready for this. This is not going to be one of those tech stocks that does 30%. But if you buy it at the right price, you're going to get that very, very steady growth year after year. It's a company, just remember also, it's increasing its dividends over time, and it's also doing share buybacks. So, not something's going to shoot the lights out, but it is a trend that is going to continue to grow and relatively recession-proof. because we're going to spend on our pets regardless.
Yeah, it is one of those budgetary items that will be the last to be cut. You'll rather cut your entertainment spending before you stop feeding and looking after your pets, we hope. Pietri, you've gone into the dirty world of fossil fuels here with your first pick, XOP. It's an oil and gas exploration and production ETF. And everyone's talking about renewables. Why didn't Rovigo list today? That's a whole side issue. Why have you gone with this one?
So, like you say, I mean, I think renewables is going to be a big theme, you know, over the next 10 to 20 years, right? I think sustainability is going to be a massive theme in investments. But while everybody is looking at sustainability and looking at green energy, we have to acknowledge that green energy is actually a very, very, very tiny percentage of the total energy mix that we have for the world's power. So we have a number of things happening in the oil market. Firstly, there's a bit of a structural shortage that it seems people have mostly forgotten about. We have an output problem that we haven't built any new, massive oil rigs in the last almost 7 years now. So this is a sort of a production problem that's been looming for some time, but thanks to last year's COVID crisis and everybody going on lockdown, we all believed we would never need oil again. Oil even traded negative, simply because demand dropped off a cliff. But as the world is starting to recover from this, that demand starts to pick up again. Now, during this lockdown period last year, where oil went crazy, went to zero, nobody needed the black stuff anymore, a number of things happened. One, shale gas producers, a number of them went out of business, properly out of business in the U.S. So that reduced the sort of supply side of the market even more. Now that we're starting to come out of these, we're starting to recover, the COVID crash is over, the lockdowns are mostly sort of behind us, we're starting to see vaccine rollout, this energy demand starts to pick up again. Imagine once we start flying around the world once more, mm-hmm. and we simply just do not have enough output in the oil market from a structural perspective to meet the demand. So yes, renewables will obviously play a role in this, but we use petrol, or we use oil for everything, not just petrol. It's plastics. Yep. It's it's almost everywhere in our economy, everywhere in our world, and it's almost as if everybody thinks, well, look, we're never going to need this stuff. Sustainability is here. Sustainability is on its way, but it's not here yet. So for the foreseeable future, I say 2 to 3 years, we probably see higher oil prices.
And that's a bullish investment case for this ETF. What does it track? What are the components, and how do you access it?
So it's listed in the U.S., obviously. Most of the sort of companies that it tracks is, within the energy space, oil exploration and so on. So Marathon Oil Corp is its biggest holding. It's about 5.1% of the ETF. Diamondback Energy Incorporated is around 4.5%. Devon Energy Corp, 4.3%. There are quite a few holdings that have proper diversified ETF, ExxonMobil is in there as well. Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, Chevron has around. So it's a very, very diversified sort of broad play on the entire energy sector, rather than a sort of concentrated play on a specific individual company.
And low cost, as the ETFs all are. Do you know what the total expense ratio is on this one?
I'll be quite honest with you, I do not know what the total expense ratio of this ETF is. I know that it's currently trading at $82 on the New York Stock Exchange, so it is relatively... It's also, I have to admit, for those who are a little late to the party, it has run very, very hard over the last 12 or so months. But considering the sort of investment thesis for the next 2 to 3 years, looking at a recovery play, I think that the oil market is going to be quite exciting still for the next sort of 12 to 24 months at least. And this is why we've chosen this particular ETF as one of our gateways into that market.
We need to find a lumber ETF. If you look at what lumber prices are doing over in the US at the moment, it's also a great supply-demand story on the back of COVID. Ivor, you've gone with the Signia Itrix 4th IR Global Equity ETF. You recently picked up number 2 spot in the People's Choice Awards in the Salto Awards, and no one really challenges the Satrix Top 40. So that in itself shows you how popular this ETF has become. It tracks the novel Kensho New Economies Composite Index, and I think that's quite interesting. Just tell me a little bit more about the index.
So the index is actually made up of 22 separate subsectors, and we invest in the composite. And within each subsector, it's companies that are involved in those specific technologies. So if I could name a few, for example, clean energy is its own subsector, with a number of companies that are all involved in clean energy, for example. Then we're talking things such as 3D printing. And we're no longer talking about 3D printing of small insignificant components. There's companies today that are running, you know, proper businesses with 3D printing where you can wear clothing that doesn't crinkle and is just easily produced. Or even if you think of medical advancements, with 3D printers, they can outprint human tissue. Some of the other sectors are, you know, artificial intelligence, robotics, space exploration. So it's all of these future kind of technologies that will really drive the fourth industrial revolution today. And the whole idea is that the world is changing. In 10 years' time, our day-to-day lives will look totally different. We'll be using different devices in our day-to-day lives, and by investing in this ETF, you know, investors can be almost the early investors of the big future technologies.
And many of these businesses are listed over in the US. Who would you say this is suitable for if you're looking at someone's risk profile?
Look, because it's 100% global equities, it is considered a high-risk investment. So I would say this is suitable for anyone that has more of a longer term time horizon of about 5 years, that can stomach volatility of equity markets. But at the same time, the index is not concentrated just to a number of stocks. We're talking about, you know, one instrument. So if you invest in the ETF, it's one instrument, but underlying that is close to 400 separate stocks. So it's well diversified from that perspective, and well diversified in the sense that not every stock is involved in the same type of business. As I mentioned, one company could be involved in robotics, the other ones in autonomous vehicles, such as a company like Tesla is in the fund, for example. So anybody that can stomach the high risk that comes with global equities.
Absolutely, and in this environment that pretty much means everyone, because there is no alternative with the Fed keeping rates lower for longer. What's the total expense ratio?
The total expense ratio is 62 bps.
62 bps, that's certainly great value for getting the 400 leading companies in the fourth industrial revolution basket. Carolyn, your second choice is power generation equipment manufacturer Generac Holdings, a good old-fashioned, old-school, old-world industrial business. What's the investment case?
Well, I think this is something that South Africans can relate to. This company does not have a footprint in Africa. It's one of the only continents it actually doesn't deal with. Now, we sit in South Africa and we think, you know, our case is unique. But the reality is, especially in the US, they're dealing with legacy infrastructure, which is not up to scratch, it's under investment, it doesn't deal well with severe weather. And so they're also moving towards these more localized, regional, you know, city-based, suburb-based electricity generation solutions. We saw recently when you had the Texas snowstorms, you know, Texas was almost completely in the dark for a majority point of time. So this company does it primarily. It does commercial as well, but it provides electricity solutions to households. We've seen an increase in home sales in the U.S. They've got 75% of the home market, but they're only powering 5% of U.S. homes. So there's quite a lot of room for things, you know, for things like this to grow. If you're working from home, you need power. You know, we were all seeing that. It's got to power your Wi-Fi. So it's definitely something that is going to grow more and more, especially as the U.S. grid starts to fail. You know, if you look at California, for example, a lot of people don't realize they're having rolling blackouts from time to time, exactly like we do here. So this is a company that certainly has room to grow. It's got an enormous margin. It's 38%. It's got great, you know, great free cash flow. Storage and generation is going to be the next generation product. So, yep. You know, if electricity infrastructure starts to collapse, not only here, but in the U.S., it's going to be a fantastic investment.
We're taking you through some interesting stocks and ETFs to get exposure to the US market following the comments last night from Fed Chair Jerome Powell. He's keeping rates lower for longer, and so the party continues. And Pietri, the party seems to be continuing for Bosch Health, formerly Valeant Pharmaceuticals. That was one that was heavily shorted at one stage, reinventing itself. Yeah, but what's the like now about Bosch Health?
So, right, I think let's start with Valeant. Valeant was the company that was famously in the news, I suppose, for committing a little bit of balance sheet fraud, number one, and also essentially going out and buying smaller businesses, competitors, with making a huge amount of debt and sort of artificially inflating revenue and earnings and that kind of stuff. And eventually where they got caught and the stock tumbled something like 96%, right? Since then, of course, there's been a management shakeup. The old CEO is out, new management has been put in place, and the company is sort of starting to reinvent itself. It has quite a bit of room to go, I suppose, before people will trust it once more. But what we've seen over the last sort of year or so is that four billionaires have started investing in this company, including Carl Icahn, who's taken a $1 billion sort of stake in the company, which gives him a big enough seat to muscle his way in for a board seat. We also have the likes of John Paulson, who's famous for betting against subprime mortgage crisis. It's the largest position in his portfolio. Larry Robbins, also a famous sort of billionaire healthcare investor, has gotten involved and has gone as far as putting out a roadmap or action plan that this company can do, Bosch Health companies or group of companies can do to turn itself around. And of course, after that, enter Carl Icahn, who comes to implement this plan and does so by, you know, a number of things. One, reputation. Two, his very active involvement in companies' boards and so on. And also, he manages his own money. He answers to no one, right? So it seems as though there are some heavyweights, I guess, circling some of these deep value investors, really circling this company. And a lot of the reasoning here is that during their acquisition phase, they actually managed to pick up a whole bunch of really high-quality assets. So they're sitting with quite a bit of debt, currently around $6 billion worth of debt on the balance sheet that they need to deleverage. One of the things that they've tried to do is they've got, in fact, when they renamed the company to Bosch Health Companies, Bosch is the name of one of the sort of eye care companies that they bought that does really well, which they're looking to spin off now. Which they're looking to sort of spin out in order to settle down some of that debt. And then start working on, some of the free sort of improving the business, turning it around, right? So the share price has gone up very, very high, much already over the last 12 or so months. It's up, I think, by about 100% already. But still, it tracks only at around 8 times 2020 earnings and on a forward PE ratio of around 6 times forecast. And you compare that to the S&P 500 at 46. You know, if this pulls in line with industry peers, the price doubles from here. So we like it as a strategic sort of, position over the next 12 to 24 months. Looking for it to sort of pull in line. We've got some of the big heavyweights investing into this, and we're just, I guess, following the smart money.
Yeah, and if you look at that Bosch and Lomb deal, I think it was almost a $9 billion US dollar deal at the time. It's almost 10 years ago. It was around 2013. If it disposes of that, you talk about wiping off that $6 billion in debt on the balance sheet, and you've still got all of those other assets. So a very compelling case to be made, and Carl Icahn doesn't get too many wrong either. Your second pick is the Signia Itrix S&P 500 ETF. Good old faithful, this one, when it comes to a broad-based exposure to the S&P. Just take us through it.
Well, what I like about ETFs in general is that an investor needs to be less active and not worry so much about exactly which stocks to pick. The way that market weight indices are constructed, market cap weighted industries indices are constructed, is the companies with that are, you know, the most valuable and therefore the most liquid become a higher weight of the index. So if a company, for example, had to fail or not do so well, they'll automatically drop off the index. So it's a great way for investors to always be tracking those really good stocks that are driving the market. And if you have to look at the top 10 holdings today, it's no surprise that it's all tech stocks. We're talking Apple, we're talking Alphabet, we're talking Facebook. So it's a really great way for South African investors at a very low cost to be able to gain that global exposure to the sectors, industries and companies that are really driving the global market.
And when we say low cost, what's the TER on this?
So the TER on this is a really low cost. It's only 19 basis points.
19 basis points. That's got to be one of the cheapest entry points into the U.S. market that is available to investors at the moment. And I suppose, this really is one of those that should form, if you're looking at building a sort of core satellite portfolio, this should form one of those core building blocks, and then maybe tap on a Bosch Health as one of those outsized outlier alpha seekers on the outside. But this would be a foundation of my portfolio. Carolyn, finally, you've gone with Universal Display, OLED. One that is a materials and technology business. So it kind of blends old world with new world, because we're talking about new technologies as well. What's the investment case here?
Well, it really is more new world. This company was founded in 1994. You use these products in your home or your office. OLED is universal. It's displays. So it is this display that you see on your smartwatch, the display that you will see on your mobile. You might have a car light, a tail light, a headlight, or a signal light that is used with their technology. They work with companies like Mercedes, LG, and Samsung. And they really are one of the leaders in the industry, probably if not the leader. They've got 5,000 patents. It is proprietary technology. They've got fantastic things, you know, coming in the world. Just to give a perspective on where, it's not just a display company. Your conventional displays are about 15 millimeters thick. They're working on displays that are 4 millimeters thick. So one day you're going to have a TV display that, you know, sits on your wall that is, you know, that is a fraction of a centimeter, you know, thick. One day you're going to have a flexible iWatch or watch or smartwatch that will actually have a display that bends around your wrist. This is the type of technology that they're working on. They've had a very, very strong product growth. They've got very strong cash flows. And as we use tech, mobile tech more often, that is just going to increase.
Yeah, one can think of the displays that we're going to see in EVs as well, and all of the applications here. It was up almost 12% last month alone. It's had a pretty good run so far. Yeah. What are we looking at in terms of multiples and entry points?
Again, it's tech, it's expensive. It had a very big run in the last month because these type of component companies didn't do well in 2020. So when the rest of the tech market ran, they didn't run with it. Because, of course, during the COVID crisis, there was very little manufacturing. So it's seen a pickup from that. Again, it's one of those, you know, if you might just miss it. You know, so, you know, it might correct about 2 or 3%. You might be able to buy it then. But I personally would not wait for this because of the market growth that is going to be there.
Go ahead and get it now. Stop worrying about timing the market. It's time in the market. Damn it. American Tower REIT. Pietri is your concluding stock pick. And while REITs have certainly been out of favor, this really is niche when it comes to specialist REITs, because we're talking about multi-tenant telecoms tower real estate here. What's the investment case?
So, so it's the Internet of Things, right? I mean, we know 5G is coming, we know the fourth industrial revolution is around the corner, and it's all very exciting, it's all very risky to pick a winner, right? So one of the major winners, I think, that is going to be out of this entire mix of the way the future is shaping is obviously telecommunication services. Telecommunication services have a backbone on, and we'll see how much space exchange things in time, but for now, they have a backbone on radio towers, right? So American Tower owns around 170,000 radio towers around the world, of which I think 135,000 are outside of the U.S., right? On average, one of these towers rent out to an operator for about $20,000 a year. Operating expenditure of the tower is about $12,000 a year, so that's around $8,000 worth of operating margin, right? You can also have more than one operator on a tower structure, which doesn't increase the cost as much as it increases the revenue. So you're making around $40,000 per annum per tower on an operating expenditure of $13,000, $14,000, maybe $15,000, right?
Wow. So impressive.
Your margins are really, really good. So what you're, and as it's a rate, it has to pay out, what, 95% of its earnings, right? So it's not going to be one of those stocks that are going to rally and rally and rally and shoot for the moon, but it's going to be something that's going to pay a very solid dividend yield over the long period, right? So the dividend yield currently is just under 2. It was actually a bit more attractive a few months ago when it was trading closer to $200, $220. That was a nice place to get the stock. Currently is trading almost 252. So we might be a little late on the party here, but in general, if you're sort of in the market for something that is future orientated but a lot less risky, this is probably a good way to add a little bit of, you know, property, number one, solid sort of flow of dividends and stability to the portfolio.
They used to say safe as houses, it's now safe as cell phone towers. And then just lastly, you've got under 60 seconds, Ivor, to tell us more about this new ETF, the Signia S&P Global 1200 ESG ETF. How does it track ESG, which is a difficult theme to get one's head around?
So the parent index is the S&P Global 1200, and then the companies that basically meet the ESG criteria are included in the ESG index. So we're talking just short of 800 stocks. So they're all ticking the boxes in terms of the E, environmental, the S, the social, the G for the governance. So it's a great way for investors to align their investments with their personal values, and it provides you great global exposure as well, about just over 60% exposure to the U.S., as well as other developed markets, and about 5% exposure to emerging markets. So I see this one as a good call to our global portfolio.
Right. With that, we've got to call it run out of time. Thank you very much to all of you. Ivor Majerova of Signia and Itrex, Carolyn Kremen, Portfolio Manager at AdviceWorks, and Petri Redling, Hayes, founder of Herenia Capital Advisors, with nine of the best. I think if you're looking for broad-based and also slightly left-field access to one of the most sought-after markets in the world, you'd be hard-pressed to beat these nine picks of ETFs and stocks.